How y'all doing tonight?
Awesome. That's a little bit better than this morning.
Did y'all have a fun time doing rec and all that fun stuff today?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I left you this morning. I told you a little bit of my story. And we're going to keep going down that road for a little bit this evening. I want to tell you some of the other stuff that happened. So I'm still in high school, in the story, not now. I'm still in high school, and, you know, I got my life straight. I decided I was going to follow Jesus and just give it up my everything, you know. Sell out completely to follow him with all that I have. And then I had won my first person to the Lord, Chance Yankee. And I figured out that's what this life is about. It's not about what I thought it was about. It's not about, you know, playing football and, you know, maybe getting a good job or whatever. It's about eternal things like the life, the soul of my new friend, Chance. Remember, we didn't used to like each other. Now, whenever I get home from the mission field, guess who the first person I call is? It's Chance. But soon after that, the Lord began to do something. And within a matter of about 6 months, within my church, there were four of us who did the same thing. Myself, Chance, and then two other of my friends. And we all said, we're done living this Christian life halfway. We're going to go all out. And every one of us were members of the football team. And so we lived in community together already. And we had that opportunity to be able to keep each other accountable, you know. But we started doing things that weren't expected of us. And we said, we're going to take this seriously. And so we started doing some things that changed not only our lives, but it also changed the atmosphere within our church. And so I'm going to talk to you about some of those things tonight. And if you take notes, I want you to take notes tonight. Because if you're serious about your faith, I'm going to name for you some things that are going to help you to grow into maturity, all right? They're going to help you to have an impact. Eventually, hopefully, some of you will have an impact overseas and in the nations, but it first starts in your home, in your house, in your home church, in your school. That's where it all starts. And I think Spencer said today during the question and answer time, that's not a magic plane ride. You don't go over there and start doing things that you're not doing here at home. So what I'm going to talk to you about tonight is kind of how to move into that stage of where you're growing and you're maturing in your faith so that when the time comes, God says go and you say yes, sir. So what we started doing, and I'm just going to kind of give you a glimpse of it, and then we're going to go to the Word. What we started doing is we started taking our spiritual walk seriously, and we started finding places to serve. So, like, you know, we had like a Wednesday night meal. How many of you guys have Wednesday night meal at your church? Anybody? They don't do that anymore? All right, a couple. All right. So we said, hey, can we do the serving? And they're like, these four boys from the football team want to serve food. Like, what? Like, that hadn't happened. Like, in our church on Monday nights, usually some of the deacons would go out and visit people and share the gospel, knocking door to door. We said, we're going. And they said, what? Like, we've never had young people come and do things like that. We started sharing the gospel with our friends and bringing our friends with us to church. I started, me and one of my friends started going forward every Sunday down to the altar, and we would pray for the list of our friends. Every single Sunday, we would pray for them. And we just started making small changes like that. And what happened was the church started saying, what is going on with our young people? And we went from 30 youth in our youth group to 350 in a matter of 3 months. Because a few of us said, we believe that this is true. We truly believe that this Jesus thing is not just a church thing that we do. It's changed us, and we're going to do something about it. We basically sat under the leadership of our youth minister, and he discipled us. He challenged us. He would take us to like soup kitchens in downtown Fort Worth, and all of us felt very uncomfortable, but he took us there. He stretched us, and that affected my church. And I want y'all to know that, like, this isn't just about you. And this isn't just about the nations. If you begin to be serious about your faith and you begin to live a life of obedience, it will affect all of those around you. Everybody. It'll affect the people in your church. It'll affect your younger siblings. It'll affect your parents. It'll affect your teachers, your classmates. And so be aware that, like, this obedience thing, it's not just about you and the Lord. So let me let's turn to Mark chapter 8, verse 34. Once again, this is a passage of scripture that most of you have probably heard numerous times. But this is Jesus explaining to his disciples what it takes to follow him. Okay? I would think that's probably something pretty important that we need to know. So Jesus said in verse 34, and calling the crowd to him with his disciples. So now it's his disciples and a bunch of people. So it's not just the 12, it's his disciples and a bunch of other people that were following him. He said to them, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and to forfeit his soul? For what can a man give in return for his soul? For whoever is ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him will the Son of Man also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels. So here Jesus lines out three simple, maybe not so simple, three steps that you have to take in order to follow after Jesus or come after Jesus. Unfortunately, the world has flipped it on us. And I would even say many churches and church teachings has also flipped it on us. And the three things that Jesus said here for us to do, they've changed it. And you don't hear this stuff in churches as much anymore. You don't hear it taught. You don't hear it discipled because it's very uncomfortable. If you really go down to the true meaning of what he's saying, it's going against much of the teaching. So this is really a lost teaching in the modern church today. So I want y'all to kind of dig in with me. They say, not Jesus, they say that we should indulge ourselves. You turn on TV and you watch some of these TV preachers and they'll tell you about how you can get what you want. You give that preacher money, pray, do all these things, and you will be healthy, wealthy, and wise. Have y'all heard these guys before? They're saying, indulge yourself. You know, you can get something out of God. Like, that's one of the great things about Christianity is that if you come to Jesus, he'll give you stuff. Guys, that's not the gospel. And that's not anything of what we just read. Remember we talked about this morning, if you come to Jesus, you come to die. What you get is Jesus. That's better than any riches that you could find. But what the church, much of the church is telling us these days, is to indulge yourself. You really deserve it, after all. It's not really so bad, this stuff that you're doing. You know, this is just kind of a cultural Christianity thing. Like, back in the day, they didn't think these things were so bad. Joel Osteen teaches us that if we do these couple of things, that God will give us what we want. You know, that is the exact same thing that the people that we're teaching in Africa, that's what they believe. It's called animism, or a traditional African religion, all right? But you know who they go to? They go to the witch doctor. And they tell the witch doctor, you know what? I want to be wealthy. And the witch doctor says, okay, you go and kill a goat, bring it to me, and God will make you wealthy. And it makes me sick to my stomach whenever I come home to a place that's supposed to be founded in the gospel, and you hear the same stuff being preached from a pulpit. God don't work like that. God cannot be manipulated by men. God does what he wants to do. And sometimes what he wants to do is put you through suffering for your own good or for the sake of the gospel. It's not always going to be jazz hands, man. It's not always going to be happy stuff going on. That's not the way that God works. And you certainly cannot affect what God's going to do by giving money to someone or by saying a special prayer or supporting someone's ministry. What we do as Christians is the opposite of what animists do or people who follow these African tribal religions. They manipulate God to get what they want. We lay ourselves before God and we say, do whatever you want to with me. You manipulate me into whatever form you want. You mold me and make me into what you want me to be. That's the exact opposite of what these other people do. So don't fall for that trick. Because ultimately, your Christian walk, it ain't about you. It's about Jesus. That's what it's about. You remember John the Baptist, whenever he had every right. And if you hear the way that Jesus talked about John the Baptist, he elevated John. But John says what? I must decrease and he must increase. Let me become nothing. I'll tell you a quick story. Because this is in your heart, man. Your hearts are fallen, right? All of us. And we desire recognition. We desire to have nice things and whatever. That's part of the fallen nature in us. And we have to allow the Spirit of God to overcome that. I'll tell you just one little instance. I was in the jungle. This is before Bobby came. This is whenever I was still single. And I was living there in the jungle. I was by myself in this remote village. And I had been living there for about 2 months. I would go and come. But during this trip, I had been there living in a very uncomfortable place. No electricity, no running water, no nothing. Getting eaten up by mosquitoes and other bugs. And it was an uncomfortable place. And I'd been there for about 2 months. And this other missionary shows up. And it's around Christmas time. And he shows up. And I have a guitar that I brought with me out there. And he comes up. And he kind of greets me. And I'm kind of suspicious because, I mean, I'm talking, we are 4 days out into the bush. Like, people don't just show up there, you know? And, like, he shows up, and I kind of greet him, and I'm like, who are you? You know, where are you from? What are you doing? And he was like, you know, I'm a missionary. And I'm thinking, okay. Something just didn't seem right, though. And so he shows up. He said, can I borrow your guitar? And I said, sure. So I lend him my guitar, and he goes through town like a Pied Piper. He's playing that guitar, and people kind of come out and follow him around. And he begins to do all these different rituals and stuff. Things that, you know, come from Scripture, but these people didn't speak that language. So he begins, I'll just give you one example of the many things that he did. I'll give you a couple. He performed a marriage ceremony with two people that within their culture had already been married. But he saw that the man and the woman didn't have a ring on their finger. And so he said, oh, y'all are living in sin, so y'all need to come down. And they didn't understand a word he was saying. So he called them forward and he stood there and he did this whole ceremony in Spanish with these two tribal people that were friends of mine that had been married for probably 30 years. And he blessed them and did all these things. And he asked to borrow my ring. And I let him borrow my ring. And I'm thinking, I don't even know what's going on. And he ends up putting that ring on. And I'm thinking, what is happening? And then soon thereafter, he took a bunch of people down to the river. And he talked a few of them into getting baptized. Well, I knew very well because I'd been living there and I'd been teaching and I'd been learning the language that these people had no idea what he was saying. And so he did have a translator there, and he asked the translator, who was one of my friends, but he just spoke a little bit of Spanish. He's translating all these things, and this man comes down to be baptized, and he asked me, he said, why do you want to be baptized? And the guy's like, I don't know. The guy told me to come down here. What's baptized? I don't know what's going on. And the guy, the missionary guy, he said, tell him to say this. And he quoted this little line, and then he said, all right. And then he dunked him in the river, and he dunked about 4 or 5 people. And he left a couple days later and went back to where he came from. And I was a little bit agitated, but that kind of stuff happens sometimes. But what really got me was 2 weeks later, they were still talking about this guy. Man, his name was Macedonia. Wasn't Macedonia a cool guy, man? He was out there playing guitar. He took us out there to the river, did this, that, and the other. And I started getting jealous. I was like, man, that ain't cool. I've been out here for 2 months living here, doing it. And all they want to talk about is this guy Macedonia. And it was kind of hitting my pride. And as I kind of had to take that to the Lord and deal with it, the Lord was like, you know what? why do you care if they remember you? Like, Jay, the point of your life is that they remember me. If they remember me and they walk away and say, some guy, some strange looking guy came to us and told us this message, then you, and they follow me, then you have accomplished something. But Macedonia left, and they didn't remember anything about what he had said, but they just remembered him, and that he was fun. And so I learned in that kind of exercise of faith that it wasn't about me. It was about me trying to glorify him and trying to be behind the scenes as much as possible. If you want to know about your faith, and if your faith is about you, look at your prayers. Are the majority of your prayers asking for something for you, or are kind of revolved around manipulating God to do something for you? If that's the case, you probably need to readjust some things. And let's go back and look at what Jesus said. They say to indulge yourself, but Jesus said, deny yourself. Let me ask you something. Don't answer this out loud, but I really want you to consider this. When was the last time that you told yourself no? No, I'm not going to do that, even though I want to. When was the last time you opened up the computer and you saw something and you thought, ooh, I know I'm a Christian, I shouldn't be looking at that. But when was the last time you looked at it and you said, no, I'm not looking at that, I'm not going to do that? When was the last time somebody said something to you and it agitated you, and you wanted to say something back, something smart, something ugly, and you said, no, I'm not going to? When was the last time you told yourself no? If you can't remember the last time you told yourself no, there's probably something wrong. Because believe me, your fleshly desires haven't gone away. They're still there. They're still tugging at you. They're still trying to get you to live that way. And Jesus says, if you want to follow after him, you've got to learn to deny yourself, to say no to yourself. Learn to say no to excesses. And there are a lot of excesses in our lives today. Is there anything wrong with these things just in general? No, these things are neutral. Television, video games, you know, Facebook, the internet, all those things. Is there anything wrong? No, there's nothing wrong with those things. But whenever you begin to do those in excess and it draws you away from being with the Lord, then yeah, you're going to start having some issues. And before, we always pick on the young people and go after the things that's low-hanging fruit. Video games, TV, Facebook, all that kind of stuff. But to all you older people out there, listen up. You spend too much time hunting and fishing? I love hunting and fishing. But you spend so much time there that it takes away from your time with the Lord? Because there are things that we grown-ups do too, that we get addicted to and that we indulge ourselves with. So be careful. It's not just a young person thing. It's also for grown-ups. In Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1, it says, therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Listen, if there's anything that hinders you from running, from walking this walk, then throw it off. Throw it off. Get rid of it. Because the walk is more important. Let me go a step deeper and maybe a little bit more personal. Not only do you need to say no to excesses, but you need to learn to say no to sin. Pornography. Most people think, well, that's a victimless sin. I'm not hurting anybody. And I want to shatter that illusion right now. One of the things that I do in my job is I recruit young people to go to the field. After you get out of college, there's a program, a missionary program called the Journeyman Program, where you can go and spend 2 years overseas. And that's what I did, and my wife did that, and several others that I know, and I have journeymen on my team. And so one of the things I do is I recruit journeymen. About 2 years ago, I was at a journeyman conference, and this is where these young people come, and they're looking at jobs, and they're trying to find a job to go overseas. But before that, they go through this pretty extensive vetting process to be able to see, you know, who's qualified, who's not qualified, whatever. In that conference, there were 88 young women. And there were 9 young men. And it's always been a little bit off balance, but that was a little bit crazy. And so I went and started talking to people. I said, what in the fat is going on? There's 9 guys to 88 girls? Like, that's 9 to 1, guys. Like, what the heck? And so I start talking to the people that are doing these interviews, and then I'm like, is there that just not that many guys coming? They said, no, they're coming. But they never make it to this point in the process. I said, why not? They said, because 90% of them are addicted to pornography. 90% of the young Christian men that want to go to the mission field. This isn't lost people. This is young Christian men. 90% of them are addicted to pornography. So let me tell you how that affects everything, okay? My job overseas is I work and I plant churches amongst unreached people groups. The majority of the unreached people groups that remain, most of them are very patriarchal. That means they're led by men, by the fathers, by the grandfathers. And you can't just bring in young women to teach the older men about Jesus because they will not be heard. So for every one of you guys that aren't able to go, is one guy that I can't take and share the gospel with this tribe. So this personal sin, so-called, that these guys are indulging in is actually one of the major causes that these people groups are not hearing about the gospel. And I want you to carry that with you. Every time you open that computer or pop open your browser on your phone, people are dying and going to hell because I can't find any young men to go and share the gospel with these guys. And right now, I've got about 9 million unreached people groups in my area, and I have 12 missionaries. I can't get any young men. And that's why I want to challenge you high schoolers right now. Right now is the time to make that change and say, no, I'm going to deny myself. I'm going to stop this garbage. And not only is it because of the nations, but you should want to stop it because it grieves God. You've been given eternal life. You've been given the light of the world. And we want to go and sully ourselves with this garbage. We want to take the creation that God gave us and spit on it and profane it and make fun of it and point out all the flaws. It's foul, guys. And it should make you sick to your stomach to even consider doing something like this. The light should have nothing to do with darkness. And I'm going to tell you, if you've heard some of the stories of these ladies that have come out of pornography, you would see nothing but darkness. And you would be ashamed to have anything to do with that. Young men, old men, it's time to deny yourself this stuff and to stand up and be men of God. Because this is an affront. It's an affront to everything that Jesus stood for and everything that he taught. And as long as we continue in this practice, we are calling Jesus a liar every single time you do it. And I ain't just talking to the guys. Because in that same conference, they told me that 22% of girls are also involved in this net, on this mess now. You parents, do whatever it takes to keep your kids from falling into this. You Christians, learn to deny yourself. But that's not the only sin. I don't really want to just focus on that one, though. That's one that's heavy on my heart. Drunkenness. Cheating, laziness, lust, gossip, what you do with your friends when nobody's looking, what you do in your own private time. We need to be young men and women of integrity. That's what happens whenever you deny yourself. And I know that there are probably some of you guys in here who've tried to do it before. You've tried to say no. You've tried to stop indulging yourself in whatever avenue that the Lord kind of, that he's trying to pull you out of. And it's hard. Am I right? Have any of you guys tried? It's not easy. I had a young man come and I counseled him in Georgia a few months back. And he was like, I'm trying to stop looking at pornography. And it's hard. And I said, yeah, it's hard because you're dying. That guys, this is what it feels like to die. This is what it feels like to have that precious part of yourself that you know is wrong to die. It's painful. But without that death, you can't truly know life. And that's the first step. You said, if you want to come after me, you must first deny yourself. Now they say, not Jesus, they say to protect yourself and avoid suffering at all costs. Now, this is part of almost every church culture that I've been speaking in churches for the last basically 10 months. And not everybody in the church feels this way, but there is a large contingent in the church that is looking to avoid suffering at all costs. They don't understand why a missionary would go to a place like the places that we go. And I like to tell them, because I don't worship at the altar of safety. That's not my God. I'm willing to open myself up to be harmed if it's for the sake of the gospel. But that's strange in Christian culture today. That's why people think oftentimes missionaries are strange. Because you see people, and anybody that you know that's willing to pay a price for the gospel, they do kind of seem a little bit different than everybody else. Some of y'all may be in this room here, and I know you've been shunned, you've been looked at, you've been talked about. That's the way it's supposed to be. Remember, Jesus told us that was going to happen. But that's where you find out who the true followers are, is whenever the suffering comes. I was in the Amazon, and we had this man who came to Christ. He was the first person from his tribe to come to Christ. His name was Mario. Mario Coricepa. And this boy, it turned his life upside down. He came to know Jesus. He was baptized in the river. He came out of that river, and he had a smile on his face that never left him for all the years that I knew him. He was just completely filled with joy. And he came to me and he says, I got 12 kids. My goal is before I die for every one of those people to be walking with the Lord. And he started plugging away at it. Plugging away at it. He'd win this one to the Lord. He'd get in a fight with this one because they didn't want to hear it. He'd tell this one about it, and he would start winning people to Jesus. Well, that started happening in the town that he lived in, and there was great persecution. He lived in a town that was run by Catholics. And the Catholics, whenever he changed and people started coming to Christ, they told him, well, we run the school, and as long as you're doing this stuff, you can't send your kids to the school. Your kids will not be allowed to get an education here. And I'm not talking like there weren't other options down the road. This is a village in the middle of nowhere. And they said, we also own the gas station, so if you want to have fuel to get to fuel your boat up and down the river, we're not going to sell you any fuel. And by the way, we also own the medical clinic. And if you get sick, good luck. And my heart was hurting because he was calling me and telling me, he's like, oh, you're not going to believe it. They're not even letting me go to the clinic. And I'm thinking, how are you okay with that? Like, I'd be mad. And he went on a trip. He came back. And he had a little wooden house that he and his family lived in. And while he was gone on that trip, he went downriver to go share the gospel with this other village. Whenever he came back, they had completely dismantled his house. And his stuff was just laying out. There was no roof. There were no walls. They had taken all the wood and just left him there. And in my heart, I wanted to get in my truck, drive to the nearest port, get on a boat, and I was going to go let somebody know that ain't going to happen anymore. I don't care if I got to call the police. This is not going to happen. That's what I wanted to do, and I was hopping mad. Before I got one foot on the ground, the Lord said, you stop right there. Don't you dare stop what I'm doing in his life right now. And I thought, what you're doing? These guys, they're persecuting my friend. He says, no, that's me. I'm allowing that to happen for the sanctification of Mario Coricepa. I'd never considered that in my life, that persecution would have a purpose in our lives. You know, whenever he came home, his house was destroyed. He built it back. He kept winning people to Jesus. By the time I left, he'd won every single one of his kids and his wife to Christ. And who knows how many other people he had won to Jesus. Because you see, what happened is they saw him faithful in the midst of suffering. He didn't run from it. He didn't hide from it. He didn't complain about it. He endured it for the sake of the cross. And what happened? They said, we don't got that. We want Jesus like he's got it. I told y'all about the people that are being killed by ISIS in Syria, and they're cutting their heads off. But they're smiling when they do it because they know they're going to be with their father. And the Muslims throughout that region are coming to Christ. Why? Because these guys endured suffering for the sake of the cross. And they didn't bat an eyelash at it because they said, this is what happened to Jesus, and I consider myself privileged to pass through the same thing that my Lord and Savior passed through. I will not run away from it. I will stand and I will endure in the same way that he did. So basically what Jesus says here is, if you want to come and follow after me, you've got to do things the way that I did. I left my throne and I came down. I was born in a manger with a bunch of ratty old animals. And I grew up. I offered myself to be persecuted, tortured, and killed. You see the process there? He's asking us to do the same thing that he did for us. They say to protect yourself, to avoid suffering, to run away from these places. Even within my own organization, we got really bad about 2 or 3 years ago to where if there was any kind of turmoil in a country, we'd pull our people out. We'd pull them out. It's too dangerous. We don't need to have our people in there in harm's way. And about 2 or 3 years ago, we were in a meeting, and for those of you who haven't seen the movie, The Insanity of God, get your hands on a copy and watch it. It really deals with suffering. And the man who wrote The Insanity of God was there in our meeting. He was an IMB missionary, and he was speaking to us, and he was challenging us on this. And I'm going to tell you what happened is one of our vice presidents got up in front of 800 people, 800 missionary leaders, and he said, I want to confess that I was part of this and that we ran away whenever we should have stayed. And I want to ask forgiveness from you guys. We know that Jesus is worth it. And we're going to stand whenever we're supposed to stand. We're not going to be unwise, but we're going to stand when we should stand. So they say to be safe, to avoid suffering. But what did Jesus say? Jesus says, take up your cross. Y'all remember this guy from this morning? Take up that ugly old cross. And be willing to endure it in the same way that Jesus did. Jesus was not excited about it. You remember the Garden of Gethsemane? He asked if it's possible to let that cup pass from him. But the Lord saw fit to let him suffer, and he did for the sake of you and for me, and to obey his Father. He picked up his cross, and now he's asking you to do the same thing. Now, I want to tell you this. Open yourself up to suffering. Let it be a possibility for God to use that to teach you and to train you. But don't be stupid either. Paul talks about that in the scriptures. You can go through suffering because you're suffering for the cross, but you can also suffer because you're an idiot. And I've known a few of those. Don't do that. That's not wise. That's not what God called us to do. Oftentimes, I'll get a missionary that'll come to the field, and he's really excited about going to this really dangerous place. And he has what I call martyr syndrome. And they'll talk about it. They're like, man, I'm ready to give my life for Jesus. I'm ready to lay down my life. And I'm like, you know what? That's the easy thing. Live your life for Jesus. That's the hard thing. Don't come here and be stupid. Go and go preach somewhere outside of Mecca and get yourself killed. What worth is that? Live your life. Be wise. Open yourself. Don't run from suffering. Endure it. But don't run to it either. Don't go looking for a fight. Because that's not wise, and you don't see Jesus doing that. In fact, every opportunity that Jesus could, that he had to be able to step away and let, the Pharisees or whatever who were riled up, there were a couple times they wanted to kill him, and he just walked away. He didn't get involved in it. Be like Jesus. Know, too, that if you dedicate yourself fully to the Lord, that you will suffer. If you're not suffering, there's probably a reason for that. Probably because you're not a big enough threat to the enemy that he can do anything to you. Probably because you're really not walking with the Lord in the way you need to. Now, I'm not saying necessarily you're going to get hit by a car and have, I'm not saying that. Maybe it's going to be the way that your friends treat you. Or maybe you lose some friendships. Maybe there is some kind of physical ailment that you have to go through. But recognize that suffering is part of the Christian life. It is part of it. It is necessary. I'll tell you that for me, it's probably been one of the most refining things that I've had to walk through. And I'm just going to run you today. If you guys there, I know that I've spoken to a few of you that have been interested in going to the mission field. Let me just share with you some of my list. I've gone hungry for about a week without any food. I've been sick many times. I've had malaria more times than I can count. I've had dengue fever. I've had every kind of intestinal parasite that you can imagine. I've had hypothermia. I've broken bones. I've been paralyzed. And even to this day, I still suffer every day for the things that God's called me to do. But I want to tell you, even though, so think about it. Count the cost. Know that if you go into that, that there's going to be suffering that comes along with it. But on the flip side of that, there's also a sanctification that goes along with it. It's drawn me closer to Christ. It's drawn me closer to the Lord so that my relationship with Him is one that's vibrant because I need Him. Suffering help. Paul talked about having the privilege of basically participating in the sufferings of Christ. Don't run away from them. Because sometimes they're the very thing that help you to kind of get over the next hurdle and grow in your faith. All right, here's the next one. Jesus said, deny yourself. That's step one. Pick up your cross. Be ready to suffer. Open yourself up to whatever He wants you to do. And then the third thing that they say is to lead other people. You go into a Christian bookstore and try to count the books on Christian leadership, and it'll be like the sands of the sea, my friend. You will never be able to count the books on Christian leadership. Because it's what we've done is we've taken all these worldly concepts and we baptized them in Christian language. We said, you know, learn to be a leader. Learn to be a leader because that makes us feel good. It makes us feel strong. Now, Christian leadership is important, but there's something wrong whenever all we have is books on Christian leadership and Jesus really didn't mention it. You know how He told people to lead? He said, follow me. Follow me. And what happens is, whenever you start to follow Jesus, whenever He is the focus of your life, and you've cast off everything else that hinders you, and you're striving after Him every day, the first thing you do when you get up this morning, you begin conversation, you get into the Word, you love Him, you share Him with your friends, you talk to other people about Him, you learn more about His character, who He is, and that's what your day is about every single day. Guess what? You change. And as you change, people say, man, Jay's got something that I've never had before, and he just passed through that trial, and he kept his head up, and he was strong, and I don't know what to do. I've got these troubles going on in my life. Maybe I'll try what Jay's doing. And you keep striving on, you keep striving on, and that person begins to follow, and then other people follow them, and before long, you look over your shoulder, and people are following you, and you've actually become a leader because you're following. We're trying so hard to lead that we get our eyes off the goal, which is Jesus. And if you just keep your eyes on Jesus, you just keep striving after Him, people will follow after. People will follow behind you, not because they're trying to be like you, but because they want Jesus. Isn't that the goal in the first place? The world tells us to lead other people, but Jesus said to follow me, to completely follow Him. So how do you do that? I'm just going to give you a few practical things. You love His Word. If you spend 5 minutes of time in the Word every single day, that's not enough. For you guys who play video games, whenever you say you love a video game, like, okay, I love this new game, whatever. Like, you're playing that thing hours a day, am I right? That's what it means to be consumed by something, okay? And if you want to be somebody who is following after Jesus with all of your heart, with all of your effort, you will be consumed by His Word. You'll read it, you'll ponder it, you'll think about it, you'll try to obey it, you'll read some more, you'll continue to dig in the Word. You will learn to pray. You'll talk with Him. And it doesn't have to be these, you know, church prayers. Like for me, a lot of my prayers are just like, hey, Lord, I'm struggling. I need some help. Or, Lord, help me to know what to do here. Lord, please give me wisdom as I walk into this. Let my ears be open as you tell me what I should do or what I should say. It's just basically this ongoing conversation like I would have with a friend. It don't have to be some fancy church prayer where you're using theology words and whatever. Just spend time with him. Talk to him. Learn to obey everything that he commands you to do. Whenever you open your scriptures, I would say, don't close that Bible until you found something new to obey. One of the practices that I've had in my life is I'll pick something that I'm weak in, something that I'm not obeying, and I'm not letting go of that. I'll bulldog that until I start to obey it. Just a quick example, my sister, she kind of walked away from the Lord for a while after college and ended up marrying a man who wasn't a believer, and we had pleaded with her, don't do this, don't marry this man, it's not right, we know he's not a believer, this is not going to end well. We pleaded with her, and she did it anyway, and it was a real big trial for my family, and we found out later that he'd been smacking on my sister, and I'm from Texas, that don't go over well, and I've got a lot of guns, and thankfully, whenever I found that out, I was in Peru. And I couldn't do anything about it because he was a whole other world away. But what happened was this hatred entered my heart. And I was consumed with hatred for this man. And if I could have gotten my hands on him, I would have beat him to a bloody pulp. And that's all I could think about. I lay in bed at night. I talked to my wife about it. I'm like, I can't believe this guy laid hands on my sister. I mean, I was furious. But it began to consume me. And as in my scripture reading one day, I came across this very odd passage that says, I don't know what Jesus was thinking. Love your enemies and pray for those that persecute you. And man, the Lord said, that's for you, buddy. You know, this is the first time in my life that I'd ever really had an enemy. Somebody that I was consumed with hatred for them. And he says, I commanded you to love him. And I'm like, I don't know if I can do it. Lord Jesus, I don't know if I can do it because of what he's done. And I try to justify it with the Lord, and he says, nope, I command you to love him. And then once again, there's that other command or that other teaching of Jesus. If you love me, you will obey me. If you do not obey the things I've commanded you, you do not love me. So now I'm in a corner. I've either got to deny that I love Christ or I've got to obey. I confessed it to the body of believers. I told them what was going on in my heart. I told them the challenge that God had given to me, and I asked them to pray with me. And it took. And I don't say this in pride at all, because I'm ashamed that it took me 1 year to finally get to a point where I could both pray for that man and love him in my heart. It took me 1 year. But I would not let go of that teaching until I had learned it and I was doing it in my life. There's probably some teaching for every one of us in this room that we need to grasp a hold of, and we need to learn to love obedience. Love his church. Guys, that's what he gave you. He gave you the church to help you to grow. There are mature men in probably every one of your churches that are there to help you to grow into being a mature man of God. And for you young men who are wanting to follow after Jesus, I promise you there is a younger man who also needs to be led by you. As you follow Jesus, love his church, participate in it, share, study God's word, be a part of what God's doing there. Listen to their counsel. Love discipleship. Find someone. I always tell all my missionaries, you need two people in your life. You need a Paul in your life, an older brother that will teach you, and you need a Timothy, somebody that you're teaching. Always a Paul and a Timothy in your life. Love discipleship, and also love discipline. Learn whenever an older brother, and this is part of that discipleship thing, if they're doing it right, they're going to encounter things in your life that are not pleasing to the Lord, and they're going to say, that's ugly. That sin in your life. Learn to take that, to receive that, and to move forward. Don't say, well, you know, let me explain it a little bit more. Or, you know, it's really because they did this. Don't deflect it. Take it in. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to brag on a snowbirder real quick. J.D. Hull, who in here, raise your hand if you know J.D. Hull. A whole bunch of y'all know J.D. J.D. has become an expert at this, and I hit J.D. hard. He does something, and I know, man, this is outside of Christ-like behavior. I say, JD, let's go for a ride. We go for a ride. I kind of challenge him on a few things. And JD will not do that thing again. And his heart has changed. I mean, it is really amazing. Learn to love discipline. Whenever an older brother kind of tries to guide you, even if maybe he's wrong, love the fact that he loved you enough to try to keep you on the right path. Let's, excuse me. Let's run over to Romans chapter 12. We got a few more minutes. So I'm going to reiterate these three before we move on. In fact, I'm going to get you to help me. Jesus said, if you want to come after me, you got to do three things. What's the first one? Ah, come on. Deny yourself. The second one. Pick up your cross. And the third one. Follow me. Romans chapter 12. We're going to start in verse 9. And this is where some of those practical things come into play. And guys, I've got some more time, so I'm just going to kind of walk you guys through this. And I'm going to comment on several of these. And take some notes, you know, and figure out maybe one of these as we're talking about it, is going to jump out at you. Make that your commitment, like I did the whole thing about love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. If one of these that we read jumps out and you say, you know what, I think the Lord wants me to learn to obey this, then do it. But this is a list of commands. Okay, this isn't playtime. This is a list where Paul is commanding the Roman church. He's telling them this is what we are supposed to do. Go and do these things. And so I'm gonna walk through some of these. The first one, let love be genuine. Don't fake it. Learn how to truly love someone. And as I shared before, like, that doesn't just mean being nice to people. Sometimes it's saying the hard thing to someone because you love them and you want them to grow in their faith. All right? Let your love be genuine. Look for any sign that maybe it's not true, that it's false. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Let's go with that first part. Abhor what is evil. This is a little bit more complex than it sounds, because what we like to do is we like to abhor what is evil in other people, right? I mean, that's what the Christian church in America is famous for. We abhor what's evil in the world, you know. We're going to boycott Disney because they did this, or, you know, we hate this person, and so we're going to boycott them, or we're going to talk about them or whatever, but we abhor evil in the world. Guys, come on. They're lost. How do you expect them to act? Like, we hate that those things are there, but they're acting that way because they don't know Jesus. You want to really have an impact, and you want to talk about what this means? Abhor the evil that's inside of you. I saw somebody wearing a t-shirt this week that said, make war. I'm sure some of you guys have saw. That's what you should hate. That's what you should go after. Those lustful thoughts in your mind, that's what the evil that you are supposed to abhor and hate. Your attitude towards your parents sometimes, your desire to cheat in class or to be lazy on the football field, that's the thing that you need to hate. Anything that draws you away from being the person that Christ called you to be and wants you to be, those are the evils that you should abhor. When you see the evils in the world, it should make you sad, but the response to that is not a boycott. It's to share the gospel with those people. Boycotting them ain't going to change their behavior. It's not going to change their heart. If you really want to see that evil disappear, then you first learn to walk and live like a true Christian, and then you go give the gospel to them, and that's how that evil will disappear. Not by you complaining about it and talking about how bad those people are. Abhor what is evil and hold fast to what is good. I'm going to give you a little lesson in tattoo history. Hold fast. This is what I got here on my knuckles, okay? Hold fast is, it actually was an old sailor tattoo and then kind of turned into this biker tattoo. And the reason that these guys used this was because sailors, whenever they'd be on these high seas and whatever, these huge storms would come, and sailors would tattoo hold fast because they were trying to remind themselves, and they also thought there was some kind of magical power that their fingers would get, and they would not let go of the rope whenever those storms would come, because if they let go of the rope, they go in the drink and they die. Because that storm's so bad, there ain't no coming back from that. And so that idea, hold fast, that's the picture that we have, is that basically, if you let go, you die. So don't let go. Hold on to it. And what Paul is saying here to the church in Rome is, hang on, hold fast, don't let go of those things that are good. For some of you older Christians in here, you remember back in the time where you have kind of your glory days in Christ, maybe those early years, and you think, man, I was so close to the Lord during those days, and I was doing X, Y, and Z. And somewhere along the way, we let go. And we stopped doing some of those things. We didn't hold fast to some of those good things that we were doing, because the troubles of this world got a hold of us. And we said, well, yeah, but I want to go share the gospel because I got this, that, and the other to do, or whatever. Paul's saying, hold fast to things that are good. If there are good things in your life that God's given you, hang close to those. If there are things that he's producing in you, don't let go of them easily. Don't let peer pressure change it. Hold fast to the things that are good. Love one another with brotherly affection. That one's pretty easy to figure out. Love on one another fully, completely. This is the second time he's mentioned love. And this is one of my favorite parts right here. Outdo one another in showing honor. You want to go to a church that's really functioning and working well, you will notice this is something that happens, is that people encourage one another. They honor one another. They say, I just want to point out something that my brother did that blessed me today. Let me honor him. Let me do something that lifts him up and helps him to know how much he's loved and how much what God's doing in his life is affecting me and others. Just on Wednesday night, I was in one of the small groups here in Red Oak Church. And I heard somebody doing this, somebody else, just talking about the goodness and honoring their brother and their sister in Christ. It made me happy because that's what Paul's commanding them to do here. Outdo one another. That's a competition, guys. He's like, all right, see which one of you guys win. Try to outdo each other in showing honor to one another. Let that be one of your practices. Do not be slothful in zeal. Be fervent in spirit. Honestly, this is probably more for the adults than it is for the kids, because you young folks, you don't usually lack in zeal. I heard y'all out there playing today, and yeah, there were some pretty zealous kids out there playing. Y'all were having fun. Whenever you catch a hold of something that's true that you believe in, you usually dive in wholeheartedly. It's usually whenever we get older that we kind of get embarrassed by our faith. I read this really funny story today, and I was reading this book. This missionary, his name is C.T. Studd. Y'all remember Edward Studd this morning I talked about? It's his son. He became a missionary to China and to Africa later. And it was talking about his wife. And they were having this worship service, and C.T. Studd was leaving this worship service with a whole bunch of sailors on a boat. Okay, these are like British sailors on one of their boats. He'd won a lot of them to Christ. And they're having this, they're singing this song, and they're standing up, and they're singing some songs, and they get to this song called Stand Up for Jesus. And CT says, well, we're already standing up, so like we need to do something else, you know, because if we were sitting down, it'd make sense to stand up for Jesus, but we're already standing up, so let's stand on the chair for Jesus. And it was a really silly thing, but all of them got up on top of the chairs except for one missionary. And this guy, he's like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. And whenever he left, he was actually talking to what was going to be C.T. Studd's future wife, and he was wearing her out, saying that was totally inappropriate. Oh, terrible manners to stand on a chair and act like it's some religious thing. I can't believe that y'all even did that. So some months later, she's on a boat, and guess who else is on the boat? That man. And he is downtrodden. He's frustrated. He's about to go home. He's about to go back to England because he just can't handle this Christian life or this missionary life anymore. And he's just depressed and down. And she kind of tries to talk to him and encourage him. And he's just like, you know what? I just don't have what y'all have. There's something different about you guys. And I can't grasp it. And she says, well, do you believe that this is true, that Jesus is who he is? Yes, I do. Would you do anything for Jesus? Yes, I would. And he goes, oh, but there was that one thing. It has bothered me that I wouldn't stand on that chair. And she says, well, maybe you should just go and stand on the chair right now. He was like, what? And they were on a boat, okay? And they were going to another town in China. And he was like, you mean right now? And he was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. And he walked into the dining hall of this big boat, and he stood up on a chair, and he sung a hymn. And I'm sure everybody there thought he was ridiculous, but whenever he got back down, he went and talked to her, and he says, you know what? All that despair and depression is gone. Whenever we get older, and guys, y'all, you young people, guard yourself against this, we start to think more highly of ourselves than we ought to. We start to get distinguished, and we're afraid to do some of the stuff that we did in our youth. Don't lose that zeal of your youth. Don't be slothful in your zeal. Serve the Lord. Service, man. I mean, you certainly should serve your fellow man, but serving the Lord is, once again, obedience. Whatever you ask me to do. Whatever you ask me to do. Let me give to you song. Let me give to you my service. Anything that you need, let me serve you. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation or suffering. Be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. Let's stop there on the contribute to the needs of the saints. Guys, I guarantee you there are needy people in your congregation back home. Am I right? You ain't ever too young to start giving to the needs of the saints. And I know people, and in fact, there's a lot of people in the church here at Red Oak, some of the most generous people in the world, and they have blessed people all over because of that generosity. Learn that at a young age. Because it says over in Timothy that an elder, a mature Christian, cannot be a lover of money. If you can learn to give, you can learn to be generous now, you'll never deal with that issue. The second part of that says, seek to show hospitality. What does that look like as a high school student? For a grown-up, they have a house and they have all these things, and so it's a little bit easier for them to show hospitality, but you guys have a way of doing it too. If you have a car, give people a ride to church. You know, if you have some way to serve them in that way, show hospitality to them. If maybe someone's sitting alone in the lunchroom, sit down with them. Show them hospitality. Now, I know that these things just seem like, oh, these are just moral things to do. But Paul said these are the marks of a true Christian. Like, imagine if you started living with all these things in your life, what an effect it would have on those around you. Bless those who persecute you. Bless them and do not curse them. I'm just going to read through some more of these. And if one jumps out at you, write it down. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Don't be haughty or arrogant, but associate with the lowly. Never be wise in your own sight. Repay no one evil for evil. But give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. Let me stop right here on this one for a second. Man, this is the flesh right there. Don't repay evil for evil. And it comes out, and sometimes we don't even notice it. And let me just kind of give you one little quick example. Like, whenever someone says something to you and hurts your feelings or upsets you, your desire is to punish them. And a lot of times it'll be like, oh, I'm going to yell at you or whatever. But sometimes it's to say, you know, I'm going to withdraw my friendship for you for a time. Guys, as simple as that is, that's repaying evil for evil. Learn how to bless people whenever they do wrong to you. That's what Jesus did. Don't let your emotions and your flesh drive your response to people. Let the Spirit of the Lord be the one who directs you in that. Where am I at? What verse am I on, y'all? What? 16? 17? All right. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be wise in your own sight. Repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. For by so doing, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. Let me just wrap this up. And, you know, the last part of this message, intentionally, was a little bit more boring. Because that's what the next step is like. It's choosing to do right and doing it. You know, you can get up and say all the fun, loud stuff, and tell the great testimonies and all those things, but those things don't happen until you start doing the small things right. You remember my friend Chance that came to Christ? I had to learn to do the small things right before that happened. All right? So, that was a big one. I don't know. Is he trying to tell y'all something? I don't know. But if we truly believe he is who he said he is, and we believe the scriptures that says, if you love me, you'll obey what I've commanded you to do. If you don't do what I've commanded you to do, you don't love me, then I'm going to challenge every one of you here. Pick something. If you want to be mature in Christ, if you want to have an impact on your church, if you want to have an impact on your school, if you want to have an impact on your family, if you want to have an impact on your teammates, on your classmates, if you want to have an impact on the nations, that starts with small things right now. I'm going to ask you a hard question, and I want you to get ready to raise your hand. How many of you have shared your faith with a friend? Raise your hand. Ha, that blesses my heart. I don't usually get that response. I'm a little bit shocked by it. You can put your hands down. Don't stop doing that, because that's the answer to all the problems that we have surrounding us. All the fighting, all the stuff you see on Facebook and on the news and all the stuff, the turmoil that's going on within our own country, you've got the answer. And he's a person. His name is Jesus Christ. So live it out. Learn to live the life that God called you to live. Show that you believe it's true by completely committing your life to Jesus and then go and tell people about it. How many of you have seen one of your friends? How many of you have won one of your friends to Christ? Raise your hand. Okay. For those of you who raised your hand the first time but not the second time, don't stop. They say an average is for a person to hear the gospel 7 times before they respond. Maybe you're the 6th time, maybe you're the 2nd, maybe you're the 7th. Just keep on plugging away at it. Keep sharing the gospel, because it's the truth. And they're not going to know any other way. Well, this is my last time speaking with y'all. I'll be around or whatever if y'all want to talk. But I want y'all to know that y'all blessed me this week. It really was a blessing for y'all to be here. I've spoken to several of you. And it's my prayer that many of you go to the mission field. And for those of you who don't go to the mission field, I pray that your life would be consumed by his mission, whatever that means. That means being an active part of your local church. If that means going on short-term trips, if that means helping to fund those who are going, that's my desire for you. But ultimately, I want you to live a godly, upstanding, mature Christian life. And so that's my challenge to you guys. Pick something and start trying to obey. Let me pray for you guys. Lord, I just thank you for this group. You know, it really is a blessing. It's been a blessing to me to be able to see a group of young people, the majority of which are faithful and that love you and that have actually shared their faith and that have demonstrated their love for you within their church, within their neighbors and their families. Lord, this is just a small contingent of those who claim to be Christians, and then there are many others who've never heard, Lord. I pray that the ones that are in this room would be invested in by older men and women in their church. They would continue to grow in their faith, continue to grow in their understanding of the scriptures, but even most importantly, that they would continue to grow in their obedience. Lord, that their lives would be characterized by